Hey everybody, it's John Bollinger from Premier Guitar. If you're into pedals, then you know what it's like to spend an entire evening perfecting your pedal board. And then you play a couple gigs and realize you want to add something or take it away. And that's why I love the Dario's expanding pedal boards. They grow with your setup or shrink to fit your needs. I also love their flat patch cables with zero interference. The Dario understands the mindset of every player.
You guys love Rig Rundowns. We love Rig Rundowns. Love, please like and subscribe so we can keep doing these Rig Rundowns.
It would mean a lot.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out at Marathon Music Works in Nashville, Tennessee with Connor Curley, but we call him Curley to keep it all straight with all the Connors going on here.
I know, yeah.
Gentlemen, we've joined with the team again less than 2 years. You guys have put out a new record. And experiencing that live with the fans now, as they've been able to listen to it and digest it. What's that been like, playing in front of the crowds?
It's been cool, yeah. I think the record's a little bit more expansive. We've added the tour member in Chili Jessen with a lot more kind of strings, and the sound has definitely expanded a bit live, and the guitars are more like guitars and the strings are more like strings.
Yeah.
I feel like we're not stretching ourselves as much trying to get like all the spacey sounds that you would on the record and stuff.
When you
like
were doing the record, you had mentioned the phrase, I'll take it from you, is a playbook. You written a new playbook writing this new record and recording it. Was it a concern of how to pull it off live, or were you just focusing on making the best record possible?
We were just focused on making the best record. I think we, for the first time, just didn't think about live, and we're very kind of studio focused, and you know, we kind of did a lot of the writing in the studio with a lot of like synths and stuff like that, which was really good for, because then the guitars can just be more like guitars.
Yeah.
And I feel like the rule book for us was just like, you know, like picking up more kind of fuzzes and like maybe more tones that are kind of like 2000s-ish, like, you know what I mean, like,
yeah,
they're a little bit more caustic and definitely way more dry than it would have been before, you know. So
now I know, Red did a little homework, is that you guys, several of you in the band purchased Mellotrons.
Yeah.
What was that experience like, learning that as a different instrument, and then also how does that get reapplied to thinking of your guitar playing and the nature of your guitar in this band?
Yeah, they're really sick instruments. I think I was in, they have a factory in North Carolina somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in that town. Was it Asheville?
I believe so.
Yeah, we were in that town, and I just went in and I got one of the mini ones because I was just like, you know, a little memento. It's nice to pick up gear on the road. And then I just started writing stuff. Carlos and Graham got one as well, and you know, when they're around, suddenly songs start coming about, and they're just like really, they're not like realistic string sounds, but they're like, they're almost like sound, like they are sampled like sounds. So
yeah,
it added to that kind of vibe that some of the tunes we were going for, like Starburster, had, that were kind of like more hip hop influenced, or yeah, kind of sample based.
Now, this record is the first time that you stepped out as a lead singer.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was weird. It was strange. I kind of went from, the last time I sang in a band was when I was a teenager in a pub for about 50 people. So to go from that to like the shows that we were playing was it's a bit frightening, but it's been nice. Yeah, it's been cool to kind of see that side of things, and it's been cool.
Yeah, and the last thing before we start getting into the gear why everyone's here is, I did this in honor of your other interviews for publications, is that you guys have name dropped several bands that I grew up listening to, one of them being the Deftones.
Oh yeah.
So like,
yeah,
how did that music of the late 90s, early 2000s enter your guys' orbit and kind of seep into your musical DNA?
It was backstage before going on.
Okay.
Started listening to a lot of Korn and a lot of Deftones just to get us hyped before going on stage, you know. And I think I just really resonated with the Steph Carpenter's guitar playing, you know. They kind of can be super heavy and then pulls it into like really beautiful chords and like kind of shoegaze stuff. And I just thought the kind of where he was sitting and the kind of influences that he was drawing from, I was really like connected with it. So like, Yeah, it's cool.
What about, you ever think you could do 7-string, 8-string?
I'd love to try. I mean, I don't think, I can barely do 6-string, so I'll,
yeah.
I'll give it a go. I don't know. I might get like a baritone, you know, get 7-string without the, you know, the high strings, you know, just to be in that tuning or whatever, like, but yeah, I don't know. Might mess up my brain a bit, like, so.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the gear, and, you know, if anyone wants to check out other pieces of your gear that they've probably seen on stage, check out that Rig Rundown from 2 years ago when you guys were opening for Arctic Monkeys. There's the Johnny Marr Jag, a couple other pieces.
Yeah.
So we're going to focus on some new friends. What do we got here, this white one?
This is a Fairlane Guitars. This model is called a Zephyr. And the two lads who build it are called Ruben and Kev out of London. And they were doing luthier work for me and for the lads for years, like, you know, whenever something would be banjaxed, they'd like fix it like proper, and they just started making guitars, and every time I go to their shop like to collect something, they'd have like a new one, and you know, they just love non-reverse Firebirds and Jazzmasters, and I was like, I love that as well.
Yeah.
So I needed more guitars for when we started touring, and I was gonna, because they usually like they build them to order, so they were like, they sent me out this one and another one to just get a feel for them, and I was just like, plug this in, and I was like, this is it, like this takes away a lot of pedals that I would have been using. These are like Monty's P90s and Mastery Bridge. Yeah, it just works, you know, it's just, when you feel it, you can tell that it's made by like two people, you know, it has that attention to detail, it's just like, everything's intonated, and I like the size of it, and yeah, it's just working for me now. It was just going to be an alternate tuning guitar, and then it just started playing the older stuff, and I was like, this kind of sounds like what I was trying to do with those guitars or something like that, you know, so.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least from what I've seen on the live setup, is this one of the first times you've interacted and partied with the P90s?
Yeah, definitely on a, I have like a hollow body kind of ES guitar with P90s in it, but like, this is the first time like a solid body, and these pickups rip, they're like, they're cool.
Can we hear a little bit of it? I know that you played in the intro, but let's hear a little bit more.
Sorry, that seems a bit out of tune.
Now, where are you, as you're tuning up, makes me think, what tunings are you guys using on this tour?
So primarily standard, but then the Jazzmaster lives in two tunings. It's in E-flat standard for Song in the Modern World, and then it's in a kind of weird shoegazy tuning for the song Sundowner that I kind of just felt out, like trying to find a chord in the studio and just recorded it.
That's the song you sang, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about this guitar, or do you want to move on to the Jazzmaster?
Yeah, let's move on to the Jazzmaster.
All right. Now, how did this become part of your arsenal?
Fender sent me this a couple of years ago, actually, and as I was saying, when we were going for kind of heavier tones and stuff like that, like I didn't have that guitar when we were recording. This was kind of the one that ended up being, you know, if we were putting on a fuzz or something like that. It's just a bit more stable, and P90s have a bit more kind of scope than the Jaguar or whatever.
And can we hear some of this?
Yeah,
man.
What tune is it? Oh yeah, this is in the Modern World tuning.
And what strings are you using on both these in the electrics?
Always, I think I said it before, it says Ernie Ball Burley strings.
Okay.
So they're like heavy bottom 11s.
Yeah. There's something about the Jazzmaster.
The pickups,
man. It just sounds so good.
It does, and like even like if you put on the Lumer.
That has to be new because I don't remember hearing that sound specifically.
Yeah,
that
that's definitely new. The Lumer, yeah, it was just in the studio that we were writing it with. And yeah, I think it's like a Kevin Shields, like Lumer is like a My Bloody Valentine song or something like that. So it has like a reverb section over here. And yeah, the fuzz on it's just sick. And it has a scooped fuzz as well, which is like, it's kind of nice to have something that can kind of sit around, like just be kind of like a kind of caustic sound around everything else and just like fizzle. And then you can just have it full on like that was there. Like, so, yeah.
Cool. Man, can we hear that different switch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just kind of scoops out all the kind of shite, you know?
Yeah, man. Where do you live most of the time on the switch?
Oh, mainly I have a flat, and then just for that song, Sundowner, but this guitar isn't in that tuning, but that's the one that that kind of, yeah, that comes out, I know.
Now, was that something that your producer and the new record put into the fold, or was that something that James, like, threw at you guys?
The pedal or the kind of, no, not really. I wrote the line for that song, Here's the Thing, with that pedal. So that was just a sound. And then Sundowner was kind of, can't even remember what we used on that, but like, just the way it's produced in, I could hear that it sounded like it was scooped and it kind of like gets out of the way, but it's just like, because there's Mellotron going on, Green's playing acoustic and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's like, you can kind of have a gnarly tone, but it's not like tearing the face off people and stuff like that as well, you know.
To go a little further with that, is how was that different with James than working with Dan? And not a negative way, one's better or worse, but just the workflow and what came out of the band.
Yeah, I think true, like obviously it being a different producer and like our mindset just being a bit different, like let's kind of make it a little bit more high production, and that was just kind of like the goal or whatever, like was trying to make everything a little bit more layered and a little bit more full and just kind of a little bit more modern, you know, a little bit more HD. And I'm not sure if we went all the way there, but we ended up somewhere in the middle.
Like up to 720p, you're, you know, yeah, you're still, you yeah, can I know. Get to like 1080 or 4K.
I mean, you can't give it all away, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I did, doing the homework, I know that Princeton Reverb was kind of a big hit for you in the studio.
Yeah, there was one that was there, and like, genuinely this thing looked like it was on its last legs, you know. It was like the wire was kind of coming off it, but obviously everyone that goes to that studio kind of uses that amp. It's kind of, I feel like every studio has like the special amp, you know. Yeah. That like, and yeah, that one was, it just had everything. It had all the nice harmonics, all the nice kind of crunch that you can get off one of them. And it's set up two amp system, but I'd say most of the guitars on that, for me anyway, was probably that amp. Yeah.
And but live you're going the twin just to have a little bit more,
just to have a little bit more. Yeah. And it's kind of just where I feel comfortable, you know, and just like can kind of just have it EQ'd like fairly flat or flat to like a guitar, and then just let the pedals kind of go to whatever song it needs to be or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know we covered some of the pedals last time, but is there anything that you want to give a shout out that maybe people might have, you know, can hear on the record and any of the new stuff that you're playing on the tour?
Feel like, I don't know if, did I have the timeline the last time?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, the timeline's been sick just because it's the first kind of like more, you know, like high-end digital pedal or something that I have, and like I only have like two save settings, so I have a kind of slap that's like,
okay,
that I kind of play a lot on the kind of clean stuff. A lot on like fucking guitar incision. a lot on the clean stuff, just in the background. And then with the tap, you can kind of just do it to any song. And then the Nabokov kind of, okay. So that's just like in a breakdown of that tune. And then
how are you using that versus like the Echo Dream, which is kind of a little bit more abrasive delay?
Yeah, so this is in this side chain thing here, so this hors d'oeuvres pedal creates a separate loop of these three pedals, and it's just kind of like a shoegaze thing. shoegaze sound that like it kind of just creates like a wet and dry, like you have your dry signal and this being like the wet that you can kind of blend in.
Now, do you build your own pedal board or is this something you farm out?
No, I don't build. I kind of instruct or advise, you know.
Okay.
What I mean?
So that was something you wanted to happen?
Yeah.
The side chain there?
Yeah, it was something that kind of needed to happen. Just like, it's kind of like, I feel like a lot of like the stuff that I do writing wise, you know, on a laptop, you know, kind of producing stuff, like you can kind of just have a bus of like a crazy sound and kind of mix it in to something that's going on. So like, I kind of miss that when it comes to pedals and stuff like that, if they don't have like a kind of dry, because then it's just like you're either in this world or out of it. And I kind of like, I think a blend between things is always kind of a bit nicer. So it's like, so like, that's the reverse reverb. Then you have the fuzz. That's like,
wow.
Just that tone, you know?
Yeah, man, that's gnarly. I love it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you had the tremolo and the reverb, the boss stuff on the bottom left there.
Yeah, this reverb's always the same. I mean, I'd take any reverb, really. I don't know, I've taken out the reverb on my amp and stuff like that. It's mainly just this one, and I have it on the, what is it, the modulated setting. And it's just, I feel like when I want it, if it's like a rhythm thing, I think it should just be clean, you know?
Yeah.
And like when it's, has to be spacey, you know. And then, this tremolo is just for a starburster, and it's just like. Yeah.
Chilling, man.
And that's all she wrote.
What is going on with the pedal board with Death Kink? You know, when it gets really ramped up in the middle part there, there's like a, I feel like if it's you steering the ship guitar-wise, it's pretty gnarly, sound-wise.
Death Kink's just...
It's, is that the Loomer coming through?
Not in Death Kink, actually. It's just the...
Must be the layering that you guys do.
Yeah, it's just the kind of deco and just fucking bashing it out. It's just throwing it all to the wall. You know what I mean? Like,
and what about, can you show us what's going on, and especially the way you play is Favorite, which is ironically one of my favorite tracks on that song.
Yeah, I'll grab the Johnny Marr MSC here. So Johnny Marr, or the Favorite is reverb. It's kind of down. Yeah, I mean, like that, yes, I feel like you have to play that riff on a Johnny Marr Jaguar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like where...
It has the Smiths vibe for sure.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Try not to rip them off too much, you know. But like,
you have to start paying them royalties.
I mean, yeah. If I could play like them, that'd be the better thing, like, you know what I mean?
Opposite you, it's like an acoustic 12-string? Or what's going on, like, when...
Yeah.
For you not playing?
On Favorite.
Yeah,
I think it's just a 6-string acoustic.
Okay.
And Green is actually playing acoustic on that. Green has started playing acoustic on songs now live, like from that and Amazing to Be Young. And Carlos is playing kind of more rhythm electric and stuff. And
didn't he throw a solo on the record too?
He did, yeah, for Death Kink.
Okay.
Yeah, he ripped a solo, man. It was like, it was a cool time in the studio.
Yeah, what's like to see someone, you know, typically I know that he's, you know, plays all sorts of instruments behind the scenes, but everyone that sees him out in public sees him as a lead singer. So to see him do that in the studio must have been a trip.
Yeah, it was sick, man. Yeah, he's a brilliant guitar player, like, you know. yeah, I'd say people will see it more and more live and stuff like that. But yeah, he's class.
Yeah, I could see you guys, three guitars. I feel it. It's coming.
Iron Maiden, you know?
Yeah. The Trooper.
Yeah, the Trooper, yeah, yeah. I mean, we have Chili playing guitar as well, so technically we have four guitars going on at some stage, like, so.
Dang. I can ask him, but I'll start with you. Is like, how did Carlos get designated as the Mellotron live guy?
He's just sick of playing keys. You know?
Okay, so that...
He's sick of playing keys, and he'll show you his stuff, but like, yeah, he kind of crafted this little station for himself, like, and
yeah, Bailey gave us a sneak peek. There's like a spring reverb or something.
Yeah, yeah, he kind of made this little Frankenstein thing, and yeah, he just kind of like threw his pedal board and stuff. Sounds great, looks.
Yeah, because when I saw you guys perform Starburst, I can't remember what American late night show it was on. I saw it on YouTube, but it was like, I think that might have been the first time I heard the song. I didn't hear it on Spotify or whatever else. And then to see Carlos sitting down, I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a little jarring. Because yeah. I think of you guys as obviously a five-piece, but you know, instrumentally, you have two guitars, yeah. Bass and drums. So it was, I don't want to say jarring, but it was like, okay, what's going to happen here?
And then, yeah, yeah. Well, that was the thing I was saying about like the kind of direction of this record was to not think about live. But then eventually we did have to think about live, you know what I mean? Like, and there was a lot of like... synth and Mellotron stuff that needed to be played, so it kind of...
And is that when he got the phone call?
Chili got the call, yeah.
You're like, okay, we need another guy.
But then, like, you know, when we figured out the new record stuff, then suddenly, like, some of the older tunes could live a little bit closer to the recorded version as well, you know? Okay. And there was, like, kind of keys parts, or even, like, he has, like, the Moog, the sub-bass, you know, and it kind of just... create, like, between the new record stuff and the old record stuff, creates like a more kind of modern sound compared to what we were kind of putting out before, like, you know.
For Romance, weren't you kind of holed up in a
is he supposed to be
Bailey can you grab us a Johnny Marr?
Yeah,
but for Romance, weren't you guys holed up in like a place outside of Paris?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
where you just kind of live there.
Le Fret studio, yeah, live there. I didn't see any of Paris, but thank you, man.
So it probably was not only a different mindset with working with a different producer after with Danny so many records, but also just being kind of camped out.
Being camped out, but that's the only way to do it, and I think that's the only way we'll do it now, is just like kind of just, if you can, like a residential studio, just all you're thinking about for how many weeks, like 2 weeks is the record, and
then
afterwards you're kind of so close to it that you don't even know if it's any good. And then, like, 5 days later, you listen to it, and you're like, ah, it's actually decent enough, like, you know?
Yeah. Do you listen back to the records before they're released or even after they're released? Like, what's your relationship with your music?
I'd listen to it. Like, once we're finished, I'll listen to it, like, a good bit. And obviously, like, you know, I feel like if you end up at someone's house and they know that you've just recorded, you kind of end up showing them a few songs, like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the kind of fun part as well, is to kind of get, like, a sense from people, you know, you kind of just gauge what they think, what their favorite songs are and stuff like that. And like, yeah, if they don't like the one that you like, then you're like, what the fuck?
Okay, I have one more question, because we'll dive back into favorite, is because I've never had a song on the radio or anything. What's it like hearing your music? Is it still a trip when you hear it on, you know, radio or backstage or even the grocery store or the market? Like,
no, it is a trip. Yeah. I feel like hearing it on the radio kind of missed out on that, because I don't really drive.
Yeah.
But I was driving my mum's car in Ireland, and one of our songs came on. I just remember being like, wow, that is really, really strange. Like, that only happened like half a year ago. You know what I mean? Like, that was like the first time I'd ever heard our stuff just come on naturally, you know, instead of like someone being like, it's going to be played at this time. I was just like driving and it came on. That was like pretty, pretty mad.
Well, can you show us the favorite riff?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much it.
Curly, man. And then, so just for people keeping a track at home, it was just the timeline and the deco, right?
The sunset, the okay. sunset drive, reverb, and the timeline, yeah. And that's it.
And a catchy little ditty, man.
Yeah.
Connor, thank you, man. Nice. We're talking to the other
Cheers.
Guys.
Cheers. Aye, send.
Hey, I'm John.
Chris.
And I'm Barry.
And this is the Rig Rundown Team, and we're sponsored by...
D'Addario.
Actually, I think it's pronounced D'Addario.
It's D'Addario, but no matter how you say it, we know it stands for quality. All right, we are center stage or close to it with Digo. Digo, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Real good. Now, you told me quickly as we got ready to film with you that this is the very first bass, not very first bass with Fontaines, but very first bass you've ever owned, right?
Yeah.
Tell me all about it. This has got some stories, I bet.
So when we started Fontaines, I didn't actually own a bass.
Okay.
And it was the original.
How does that work?
I was just there for vibes, you know? But
clearly it worked.
Yeah, well, it was the original guitarist who left the band a good few years ago who had this.
Okay.
And he sold it to me after like a couple of years because it was just like one of those things. But it was that thing, it was like, oh, got to buy a US Fender. And yeah. I was so delighted. But after getting it serviced, you know, after our first album, I brought it in to get it serviced and set up nicely. We found out that it was actually a fake.
Oh, no.
So it's a proper fake as well. It's like... a Chinese body and a Mexican neck, and then it's resprayed, re-decaled here to pretend with a fake serial number and everything. And I looked up the serial number and it's like a Jaguar from the 90s guitar, Jaguar guitar, you know. And then I was like a bit heartbroken, but honestly, I still love the sound of it. It's the sound of our first album, so,
wow.
You know.
How did it get used at all in Romance?
It did, yeah. It got used for the opening track, Romance.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Man, it's funny because like, yeah, you would say like, American Fender Jazz up here value, and then you get crestfallen with the news that it's a fake, but then because you're playing it and all the success you've had with the band, the value of this particular bass is risen again, you know what I mean? Because you're attached to it, the songs that have come out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's got a lot of sentimental value, you know?
Yeah, I want to go back to the vibe check. How does a guy that's hanging out eventually find his way to playing bass in the band? How does that get navigated?
Well, to be honest with you, it was my idea to start the band.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted to make it like a band that was kind of like the Beatles in some way, Beatles punk band.
Okay.
So we start off like as songwriters or something, but with a punk thing. And it was like a naive idea, and I just decided to text some lads I really liked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I want to spend more time with them, and that's how it kind of happened. You know, it wasn't so much about musicianship, it was about the people.
Yeah, and now look where you've taken that friendship.
Yeah, I think it's done us well that it was built on that, you know, to get through all the years.
Yeah, because I imagine some of those early runs, as fun as they can be, I'm sure they're stressful in terms of on your friendship and the phrase and close quarters and just, you know, just trying to figure out yourselves as musicians and young men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can we hear this before we move on and meet some other friends? Because this is, like you said, the foundation of the band.
Yeah. So go for like...
So what do you like about the fake copy? What do you like about its sound that, you know, you haven't been able to get rid of it?
I like that it's really nasal on the higher strings. It's really precise or something.
Yeah.
But there's something about these pickups. They're really high output because they're cheap as shit. In that way. And when it hits the lower string, it gains up loads.
Yeah.
So when we were starting out and we really had a very bare minimum of pedals and stuff, we didn't have money, you know?
Yeah.
It could make a really dynamic sound live to go from something really...
Yeah, it's kind of like a pedal in itself.
A bit like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least a boost or something.
Totally. That sounds really nice with chorus on it as well, like
Now, what with a new record, what was something that excited you, or what or something you're most proud of in terms of either your playing or production or the way you created your bass sound that's on the record? What stands out to you that you look back on and you're like really proud of?
Well, for the new record, we were trying to expand the sound beyond the band sound.
Yeah.
Because we had been doing everything, like we had kind of taken a rock and a Rolling Stones approach. If we can't play it live, then we won't put it on the record. Mm-hmm. So it was all, you know, fingers and strings.
Yeah.
You know, and voices. But with this one, we wanted to throw everything we thought we'd learned out the window, because we wanted to try and, forget the muscle memory that was starting to form, and then, creatively the muscle memory.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of expansion with like sub bass and different things like that, that were kind of outside of the instruments. But I think that if I was to say I was proud of something on the record, I would say that's quite versatile.
Yeah.
I think that it's like, it's quite, like changes genre a lot, and it changes what it's doing, you know?
Yeah. And it's dense, not in the sense that you lose what's going on or what's being intended musically, but it's a very, at parts, very dense, layered record. Whereas before, it felt like there was less of, you know, extra guitar layers and stuff like that, where this seems, there's parts where it's a very, I don't want to say heavy in the sense of metal or anything like that, but heavy is in dense, like track-wise. Yeah, did you personally do a lot of layering with bass and stuff?
Yeah, there was some layering with bass and some of the bass six as well, to add a bit of definition on top as well. I think that thing takes effects really nicely, and then you can use another bass like the P underneath to just do little stabs at the chords to fill out the register, you know.
Well, I gotta hear this bass six now that you've introduced it. Now, is this bass six something that's been used just kind of on Romance, or was it on previous records?
So the first time we came to the States, we were touring with a band called Idols, supporting them. And the tour was all through the South, and it was our first time seeing all the Texas desert and everything. And it was amazing. We were in a little splitter van. Actually, we weren't even in a splitter van, we were in a big car. With like our suitcases kind of on our laps sometimes, you know, it was really packed, but it was amazing memories. And we listened to a lot of country music.
Really?
We got into country music when we were driving through the desert.
That's a documentary I wish I could see, is Idols and Fontaines traveling through the Southwest, listening to country music.
Yeah.
Because Lee and Mark are just two of my dudes. I've only met them through the Rig Rundown, but they're just lovely blokes.
Oh, they're great.
Steal one of your words.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And obsessed with gear and pedals and finding sounds.
Yeah. So you guys are traveling through the Southwest, and country music is the soundtrack. So walk me through that story. And this is how you got to the bass six then?
Well, yeah, I started to hear like stuff like Dwayne Eddy.
Oh yeah.
You know, and he was using the bass six and that baritone guitar sound. And I found it really interesting as well, the cross between that and surf music and those sounds there. And I think that there's a lot of secret surf sounds in like grunge and genres that came after. Like, you know, you can hear really obviously in Ramones, you know, that surfy sound that it's built on.
Yeah.
And we just like to throw in little hints of that here and there with our backing vocals and with our guitar sounds. So I got this for the surfy vibes, and I've kept it, you know, I just kept it, hung on to it.
I love you went Squire rather than going some like really fancy high-end super boutique basics.
Yeah.
You're like, Squire.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any cash, you know.
Yeah.
But I got it like over time. I got like a little bridge put in, put in, and some new pickups or whatever.
Well, we got to hear it. Let's hear this thing.
So like, it's kind of, we were trying to do something that was a bit surf, but a bit grunge as well.
Yeah.
That's like Jackie. But it's got a good look. Thank you.
what songs are you playing this live then?
Right now I'm just using it for Jackie, but I use it a lot in the studio. Okay. It's a little studio trick. I saw a picture of John Lennon with one on his lap.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, and also Robert Smith from The Cure uses one a lot in the studio, and I just thought it was really interesting. So it's layered on Skinty Fia a lot, and on Romance a bit, and on Hero's Death it's used quite a lot as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, should we meet the P bass over here?
Yeah.
Now tell me about this story. Or its story, I should say.
I mean, it's probably the humblest story out of all of them, really, like, to be honest. It was, I needed a really good touring bass. I didn't have one. Something that I could just, you know, really, really rely on. And I was borrowing our tour manager's P bass for ages because he had a really nice one.
Yeah.
And at a certain stage, I kind of went, I need to get my own one. Like, I'm working at this. I'm three albums in. I need to have a fucking bass. Do you know what I mean? So then I went online and I was trying to get one. And I actually ended up finding one in Leamington Spa, which is in England.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just got it from there. It's 72.
Okay.
I think. I haven't checked if it's real or not because I'm a bit traumatized from this thing, to be honest.
I didn't want
to
burst your bubble,
I haven't checked
Deagle.
The serials, you know. But, you know, it's a really nice sounding bass. It's done me really well. I have these are my county colors from Ireland.
Okay.
Stuck up here on the top. Remind me of home sometimes. And yeah, it's just a nice bass, you know.
Now, compared to the jazz bass, where is this more newer stuff, or how do you delineate what gets used between the jazz and the P?
Well,
is it a feel thing? Like, I don't know if they, each bass has certain songs it goes to, or is it kind of like you choose every night which one you want to play based on how you're feeling or how the basses are reacting to you? Or do you have designated spots that these two have their roles in terms of covering songs?
Designated spots.
Okay.
If we're using something with the sub bass, then I'd like to use that because it's a bit more precise. I can put a bit of chorus on it and it's like got nice layering and it's easy to mix them, you know.
Okay.
And this was like the bottom before we got the sub bass stuff going on. So this was really to fill out the songs properly. It's got a really nice tone when it's exposed, but then it sinks away when everything else is in.
Okay.
You know, so it's cool.
Cool. Can we hear a little bit?
Yeah.
Either your wireless or your in-ear monitors took a dive off this Ampeg. So we're going to talk about this because you were rumbling.
Yeah.
Now, have you used Ampeg's gear for a while in terms of your bass tone?
I just started using it on this album, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I was using Fender for a long time. That's still a Fender cab.
Like the super bassman, the big 300-watt tube head for Fender?
Yeah.
Okay.
So essentially, I had no big amp. We're really starting to paint a picture here of me having no stuff to begin with, right? You know,
you showed up with a really good idea. That's where it started.
Yeah, sure. And so then we kind of made a connection early on with Fender through Idols, actually. They put us in touch with them and they lent us stuff for touring.
Yeah.
And, you know, initially I had been hiring Ampeg stuff. But the stuff we were hiring was breaking a lot.
Okay.
It was blowing for the gigs. The heads were blowing. I just didn't know how to use it properly, I guess. And the 8x10s are so heavy. And I was having to carry them up because we had no crew or anything. And I was carrying them up, you know, and I was like, I'm breaking my back here, like, with this thing. So then I was talking to the guy in Fender about that. And he said, the 610's really light. And I think it sounds really nice. It's versatile for different size rooms. It can be big enough and loud enough for a big room. But, you know, it's not huge either for a smaller room.
Yeah.
And it's light, so I can carry it, like, which is amazing. It's
practical. Well, now you've got a crew to help.
Yeah.
Too.
So I'm going to get a second one.
Of course,
a third
you are.
One. No, but and then I was using the Fender head for ages, but there's been an awful issue trying to get parts. It's kind of half computerized somehow, and the maintenance of it is a bit of a thing. So it's still being trying to be fixed. But in the meantime, I've switched to Ampeg because I need an amp.
Okay.
You know, and I'm really enjoying the sound of it. I like it, yeah.
It's funny that you get referred to Fender by the Idols guys, because they are not very kind to their instruments. So I figured Fender would stop taking their calls at a certain point, because Lee and Mark are just destroying their instruments, you know, oftentimes.
Yeah.
But it's good that they treated you so kindly. Fender, yeah. And the Idols fellas.
Yeah.
Well, Diego, can we go through your pedal board here? We've been hearing a lot of the chorus already, but so what else we got down at your feet?
So this one is a little delay pedal. It's a modified Ibanez delay.
Okay.
And it's something I don't use loads these days, but for something like Two Reel, instead of putting reverb on a bass to give a little bit of extra, because it's, when it's a really exposed high note, it just gives you a bit of a bed instead of... Which is
super
nice.
Super subtle, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a little slap back kind of thing. And then this is just for a little bit of cut sometimes. I really use this. This is like a overdrive distortion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's nice for some of the songs to add a little bit and get a bit of cut, you know. And this is what... Curly in the band actually plays the bass on Romance, the song.
Okay.
He uses this, and he uses this tremolo pedal for that, so it's like... some shit like that.
And then the Sans Amp, everyone knows that. But I want to ask, what do you do when Curly comes and plays bass? Do you go get a drink? What do you go play guitar? What happens?
I hang out over there for a while.
Okay.
At the keys. And then I just to do a little bit of tinkling for that song.
Yeah. And before we let you go and we talk to Carlos, what strings are you using on your basses and then picks?
I use these orange Dunlop picks.
Okay.
And then for strings, I use the Rotosound Swing 66.
Okay.
Which are the ones designed by John Entwistle.
Which a good place to start.
Really cool.
Yeah right? The strings. Ox, man.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time. I know we got to cruise and talk to Carlos before we run out, but thank you so much, Diego.
Cheers, man.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Last but not least, we are joined by Carlos. Carlos, how you doing?
Good. How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Lots changed since we last saw each other at Ascend. You are a father now, and you got the fourth record out, so congrats.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Let's get right into it. We're short on time, but we're going to have tons of fun. Mustang, I know you had the red mini guy last time.
Yeah. So I picked this up. I got this just before my daughter was born, actually.
Okay.
And it was kind of like, maybe it's my last chance to spend some amount of money on a guitar.
Before you gotta go diapers and clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think it is actually the last time I bought a guitar.
Priorities change.
Yeah, but it's it's like, it showed up in the shop in Dublin, Some Neck Guitars, you know, which is like a small little boutique guitar shop that always have great stuff. And I believe it's the same year as my red one. Kind of, now I forget the years, but they're either 66 or 67.
Okay.
And it obviously has like the sort of normal scale length of a Mustang.
Who put the hot rails in it?
And then I put the hot rail in it after we did the fourth record.
Okay.
Because there was quite a bit of recording that happened there that I used sort of heavier guitars, and I kind of just wanted to have a bit of that, you know. And I put this in there. It sounds pretty great. It's kind of like, I have it sort of, I always have it set up that like the single coil is always on, and then sort of every now and again, like I'll use that as well.
Okay.
Whenever I need kind of quite beefy sounds, you know.
And is that kind of, this Mustang served for just Romance stuff?
Pretty much, yeah. I kind of sometimes, for practicality, I use it on older songs on the set, if I'm sort of, if they're close to each other. But yeah, sort of like, some of that sort of heavier Romance stuff has sort of like, you know, sort of grungier chords. But it's a beautiful guitar, and kind of like, you know, I feel like now with so much touring and stuff, it's good to have like a spare of the same thing, you know what I mean? So now I'm mainly between this, the red one, and the Rory Strat.
Well, I'm going to hand this to you.
Yeah.
And I got to ask, since then I saw a cool video that you got to do where you get to play the collection.
Yeah.
What was that like, being able to play those guitars?
Amazing, unbelievable. You know, I was kind of like, kind of happened out a bit out of nowhere, you know. I think I went over to the auction house, added like they added a lot where it was just a new Fender, but they got like a lot of people to sign it, and like, you know, it got auctioned and all the money went to charity.
Yeah.
And they asked me to come in to sign the guitar, and while I was in the auction house, they were like, do you want to see the you know, the vault, like, and I was like, yeah,
yeah,
you know, and like went down and I was just sort of spent a while playing like mainly the acoustics and stuff in there, and they're amazing. And then I don't know, just kind of like ended up chatting to the girls in there quite a bit, and they were like, oh, it'd be just great to set it all up, you know, and get you playing them and stuff. And so we organized it, like it kind of happened 2 days after, you know.
Okay.
They sort of like set it up in a little place in London, and we played, yeah, with the sort of like the original amp and stuff. And
wow.
Yeah, and sort of picked out of the collection, picked out a bunch of guitars that were like sort of, they had all sort of been part of like my journey, I guess, you know. Then there was like
Dan
this
Electro.
The Dan Electro, and there was like a sort of cheap Chinese copy of a Strat, like an Encore is the
yeah,
brand,
yeah,
which was my first guitar ever, you
really?
Know. Yeah, so it was like so random that guitar was, you know, in that lot. I don't know why he had that guitar, you know.
Yeah, but, Rory Geller, of course.
Yeah, I know. So we had that, and then there was one as well, the Epiphone, the Coronet.
The Coronet, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the one I used quite a lot in Romance, because Alex Turner gave us, because we did it with James Ford and stuff, so after the tour with the Monkees, he was like, oh, they should take this guitar down, you know, and that ended up kind of like on a lot of like, just the, you know, all the songs that kind of had heavier chords and stuff, so that ended up being quite a big part of the record, and that's kind of why I ended up putting the Hot Rail and that, just to emulate a bit of that.
Okay.
Sort of dark, sort of, you know, chunky sound, you know.
Yeah, so you don't want to tour with that Coronet?
I mean, that was, he only lent us those for the studio, you know.
So they stay put.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man, it probably was kind of like Ghost in the Machine, or I don't know, people call it vibes or whatever, but I'm sure there was something special in being around those instruments and that amp and just,
yeah, no,
spending time with them.
It was beautiful, yeah. It was really, you just kind of like feel like, you know, the instruments end up having like a story to tell, and
yeah,
like that guitar, I mean the Strat itself, you know, the one that this is based off, was like, it looks the same, but it's, you know, it's not the same,
yeah,
at all, you know. I mean, that the neck was like so thin, you know, which just from playing, you know, it was like proper,
wow,
you could notice how much wood was gone just from the playing, you know, and all the sort of like all the ridges. I mean, this is even happening here, like already from a couple of years of playing, you know, where like it's like it felt like driftwood, that guitar, you know. It was like, it was
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow. Now what would you use this from a night-to-night basis?
I use it quite a lot, to be honest. I kind of like, you know, it's quite direct, and you know, when you drive it and stuff, it sounds quite big. So I use it like, you know, this is my main one for like, you know, chords. It's like boys in the Betterland, that has that kind of like sort of like, you know, jangly sort of, mm-hmm, like riff. It sounds really nice just with like a tiny little bit of a gain, you know.
Yeah.
no drive, and then, you know, songs like Favorite and stuff for the new record that are kind of like, you know, same chordy, and has little bits where you kick in the overdrive and it just responds really nice, you know. The sort of dynamic sort of in between driven and sort of clean is,
yeah,
is really nice, you know. So I'd say this has kind of become the main guitar on the show, you know. I feel like I use this more than the other guitars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I encourage everyone to check out that other rundown we did. There's the Red Mustang that he's talking to, alluded to, that's a little mini guy. I know he had some other instruments, a 12-string Martin that you used in,
yeah,
that rundown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure a different pedal board. Looks like there's some familiar friends we'll dive into in a,
yeah,
second, but please check out that one.
Yeah.
But in the interim, you know, let's talk
and
about
this
6-string,
yeah,
acoustic.
This one I actually got the last time we were in Nashville. I bought it here.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the shop, but
you spend enough time here, you're
gonna
buy
an old, it's a 60s Martin. It was a super small body, and I just like, I mean, it still feels quite mint, you know. I put a little sort of plastic thing there to like protect it a bit, but it was crazy. I mean, it was the 60s, but it looked like it'd never been played.
Wow.
And there was a bunch of guitars they had in that shop that same guy had sold to them, you know, and I think he used to be a surgeon or something, so all his guitars were like impeccable, you,
yeah,
know? And this was there, and that, it just felt like one of those things that had like, it just had a really nice soul to it, you know. I feel like, and it's like the body's small enough that I feel like it doesn't take up too much space, so when you mix it in with a band setting, it feels great, you know. I've got one of these, like, what are
LR Beggs area. Yeah.
And I got it, I've got it like, I don't have it active, you know, I've got the, so it's passive, you know, so when you put it through a little bit of gain and through the deluxe, it just sounds beautiful, you know. I feel like, the sort of DI'd acoustic sound, it just feels a little flat to me, you know.
Yeah, dry.
And then, yeah. And then when you amp a guitar that's a bit too big, then it's like, you know, but this, just that combination of this with the deluxe is amazing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the deluxes, you got two of them, or you got two.
I've got a twin and a deluxe. Yeah. I actually have the twin. I've been using this other configuration, the twin, but it just broke a couple of days ago. Where I have like, I have an external cab, really small, super tight, close back. And it's got these like, these speakers called, Celestion G12M70s.
Oh, I heard that you and got into those.
Yeah, I found those through this YouTuber called Aaron Rash.
Okay.
He's like, I mean, check him out. Like, it's like, he's done this sort of deep dive onto like, just figuring out like the exact sound in all the Nirvana records. And it's, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like,
part of that recipe is like, the speaker?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, it's like a detective work. You know, it's incredible. The guy, like, he sort of figured out how these speakers were in the specific cab that was rented in for the studio sessions, you know, and because he was like trying all the different amps, blah, blah, and it was never sounding right.
Yeah.
And then he finds the listing of the rented gear and he rents the same one that's still there. And he opens it up and has got these speakers that shouldn't be in there.
That's attention to detail.
It's crazy. I mean, honestly, like, there's hours of footage that this guy has done and the quality is amazing. You know, the soundtracks, the whole thing is like, it's beautiful. But it's like this, you know, for the care that this guy put into this, you know, just figuring every single little bit out.
How many of those speakers do you have?
It's really hard to track down. That's the problem now. One of them blew the other day, and I don't really have. I had like another two at some point, and then sort of like a couple broke, and like, so now I'm out of them, you know. he bought loads of them. He's got the video. The video one, he shows them. He's got like 20 of them laid out in his living room, you know. And it's like, I need to get some of those, you know.
Well, so we covered amps. Let's get over to the pedal board, and I want to hit your Mellotron station too as well. What guitar do you want to take to the pedal board?
Sure, we'll take that Mustang.
All right, let's do it. All right, we are on the pedal board again. On the, you know, we are abbreviated in this sense that we included Deagle this time. But a lot of these pedals have been on your board in the last rundown. Check that one out. But there is something that you wanted to show us specifically to this time. What are we talking about, Carlos?
It's called the 636. And it's made by this company called Soundgas, who do a lot of like sort of refurb studio gear. And I mean, I think they started as just like fixing studio gear, vintage stuff.
Okay.
And then they sort of started making some of their own stuff. And this was taken out of an old spring reverb tank called, I think it's a Grampian 636.
Okay.
And I think it was used by, I can't remember who, I don't know, I think maybe The Who used it as like the main thing, you know.
Just Pete Townsend, yeah.
Just that on the amp, and so he used the reverb in it, but he figured that the gain and it's whatever, you know, thing it uses is unbelievable.
Wow.
You know? So they kind of like started refurbing a load of those sort of spring tanks, and then they sort of realized this gain thing is just crazy, you know. And they made these units that are just, I mean, they're a preamp, but it's a distortion pedal, you know, it's like the sort of biggest distortion I've heard. And it's like, it's insanely expensive. I got it after I saw, who did I see on YouTube? I think it was Ed O'Brien from Radiohead.
Okay.
Was showing like his new board or whatever, and he had this thing, and he kind of like played through it, and I was like, whoa, this is mental, you know? And then I looked into it, and you go into Soundgas, and they show it like using it through drum machines and all this kind of stuff, and it just distorts everything in such an incredible way, you know? And I thought, like, you know, I need to hear that myself, and then.
Well, I need to hear that for myself.
So I picked it up, and
it's a hell of an introduction.
Yeah, and it's an amazing thing.
So that's just the amp.
So that's the amp. I've got like this little MXR micro amp that I've always had there that just pushes it a little bit, you know, and then the 636. I've got a gate put in the back because it kind of like, you know, it's quite a bit noisy, you know. So I just for whenever it's not, it's just there, you know. It's quite that MXR smart gate, so it's like, it's really like, you don't hear it, you know. But it cleans it out quite a lot,
man.
And it's like, this thing sounds incredible on like everything, you know. I've been using it in the studio a bit. I produced a couple of albums last year, and like I have it in a chain sort of like out of the board, so, and you can feed like kick drums into it or like anything. And it's just incredible because it's like, it's quite dynamic, you know. It's like if you play like sort of,
is that just with a single core or the humbucker?
That's with both of them in there. Yeah.
Because the indicator light's kind of showing how you're attacking
exactly,
it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So you can see it's just... And I mean, it goes quite mad, you know, it's like... Then it just... It's a bit of a preamp if you don't have too much going. And this I've been, and then it also, it changes a lot, not just like this, how much you bring out of it, but also if you push the front end, which is something I do like with the Mellotron quite a bit for like romance and stuff, when I want something to be super dirty, if you just push the front end, it starts like distorting a lot more, you know, and it kind of like, it very much squashes the sound a lot, you know, so like. That's what I really like about it. That's sort of like the way it just squashes the sound lower, you know? And that's the thing that works especially well in the studio and stuff like that with like, but it's like, it's, I mean, it's, you know, they built it as a guitar pedal, but really it is like a studio sort of preamp, you know? And it's got like, it's even built with an XLR input, you know, sort of like to use in the studio.
Yeah,
sort of,
it's versatile even though it has one knob.
Yeah, it changes a lot depending how much you push through in the front or in the back end, you know, kind of like.
Like a sound man's, you know, nightmare or dream, depending on where you're setting it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
What's that other pedal, real quick? That I doesn't
this guy
seem familiar to me. Or the
rest
of them
this
have.
Is. I use it only for what, like one moment in a song. It's okay. Kind of like a. It's just like a chorus thing. I used to have. I think it was when we did the last one. I had it was the Strymon. The sort of like the one that sort of emulated the Leslie.
The Flint.
Yeah. I had that. That was what I had before doing that.
Gotcha.
I found it kind of dipped a little bit too much. But it's basically, I just use it for like one tune, and Jackie, there's like one riff with it. It only happens like in one little moment. There's like, this is another thing, another addition, the H9. I feel like what I'll probably end up doing quite a bit is just end up loading things, small things like that that I only use for one bit. Loading, this can create so many things, you know? And this is something that's been kind of amazing because you can just load up, you can just do the presets on the computer. It's got great algorithms. It's based off the H3000, the studio unit. And, I feel like I'll probably, in the next one I have a second, I'll probably end up just creating a preset that I can put in here. And this is something I'm using quite a lot these days.
The thing about that, though, is you can't put all your handy-dandy indicators on that.
No. We're kind of like, I mean, I've got, like, you know, saved, like, called it for all the different songs, you know? So, like, but it goes, I use it from things that are, like, super, like, subtle, like, sort of, like, these kind of, like, microflange thing. It's really good for that kind of stuff, you know? It's like... just gives a nice, like, it just
some
widens
movement,
the sound a little bit. And I've got a few variations of that sort of same thing, you know, for different songs, like... just move a little different. They're, like, super subtle, but... And then you can just, you know, it's got all these, I used to have a Pog that I don't have anymore because I have this now doing like the sort of three octave thing.
Cool.
You know, so this is kind of like doing a lot of stuff that I would use only before. I had one pedal for like one bit of a song, and now I'm just sort of trying to load them in here. So, you know, but even like, even a tremolo here, like, so I don't have the normal, the tremolo before, because I've set it up there and it's got the rate exactly as I wanted and
Do
stuff,
you think
you know?
You'd ever go fully digital in terms of like a Kemper or a Fractal?
I don't think so, no, because I don't like the digital drives and stuff like that. But I think for a lot of the modulation stuff, this thing is proven to be like really, really good,
yeah.
You know? And like, like this is a crazy flange that I have here for like the solo and death gig. You know, it's like it does amazing things, this thing, you know. So I feel like I'd probably just, yeah, I can see myself maybe getting a second one of these so you can have like a couple of different modulations at the same time.
Yeah, talk to each other.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like the drives, I don't think, I'm yet to find some digital drive that does the thing that this thing does, you know.
Nah.
And then the other thing that I have is this delay thing is pretty amazing as well, because it's got like, you can kind of like choose where it accents all the delays and stuff, you know. So it splits it in eight notes, and I've got a couple of presets, you know, and there's things like this song, for example, is quite, you know, it's like, no, what is it? It's this one. I mean, like, so it's just kind of, you can really, like, you can create really interesting sort of echoes in this. And then I use it a little bit sometimes in, as a sort of sustainer, you know, because you can, like, so there's certain like some bits where like to emulate some things that maybe I did on this little keyboard and in the studio where obviously that's a note that just goes on forever.
Yeah.
I'll do that and just sort of step on that. So you can, it's quite cool because that's just set up like with one repeat, but it's just like obviously when you hold it, it does
it creates forever.
That kind of like thing, you know. So that's a really cool
Carlos,
addition.
I know we're running out of time, and this program, the Rig Rundown, is like a tour manager's worst nightmare. So, but I do want to hit this Mellotron.
Yeah.
So can we see this real quick?
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me about it.
So the whole thing is also a setup through, it's all set up so that it's kind of set up, it goes through like two DIs and it also goes through the pedal board and into the amp.
Okay.
So then there's like, you can have the sort of the clean sound of the Mellotron going out into the DIs, so it can be sort of used like that.
Got it.
And then it also goes in here. So I got this thing at the front here, which just chooses like whether I'm going to the guitar. So at that point, I'm just going through, the keys are coming in here.
Okay.
And so that's kind of with nothing on it, you know. So that sort of sounds like what the DI would sound like, you know. But then what I do is I've got these kind of like in the board, I'll give it a little bit of drive, you know, sort of with that one, you kind of have to make sure it doesn't go too hard. So when you really, with that, because it's so dynamic, when you really lean into the note, it starts breaking it up, you know. And that's the Mellotron has the kind of like this thing where it gets more intense the harder you press it, you know. So as you're pressing it harder, it starts hitting the drive, you know, so it starts sort of breaking up there. So that's going through there, and it also is going into the DIs over there. And then this little patch bay is just a way of being able to sort of control what goes, because there's some songs where like, I've got Chili playing some stuff here that was recorded in the studio, and I'm playing guitar. And in order to be able to use both at the same time, I put this patch bay in so that you can sort of route it so that it only goes into the DIs and I can still use this through the amps, you know? So you just change these patches and you can still use this effect. That's quite cool. So if I did that, it would just go out of the DIs, but for the purpose of this, it'll come into the amp. this thing is this sort of spring. It's got a spring that kind of makes quite a lot of noise and stuff, and then it's got these filters that you can kind of control. Yeah, it's really cool. So like, for example, on all the filters, I sort of got them set up here in different ways where they sort of accentuate a specific note in the part, you know, so it kind of like brings out a bit more. And so, I mean, the reverb is amazing, because and that's like the start of the show, you know. Romance, the song, kind of like starts with this thing. Is like, in this one is one, the only time I really push this, you know, and that goes all the way to the top, and then you got like this sort of like,
you said that's at the beginning of the show?
That's at the beginning of the show, that's kind of mixed with a mini Moog over there.
That's so a hell of like a hello.
Sort of, yeah, yeah. And then, so that's without sort of moving the filters or anything, but like, if you, there's another tune, Sundowner, where it kind of uses this filter thing that I move quite a bit. That's sort of... You know, so you get all this kind of like different. It was real, like really cool, really musical, you know, yeah. You can really sort of play with it. And then I got this sort of keyboard set up for like lead lines over that, you know, so in Sundowner, kind of like does. This kind of sounds a bit louder in the DIs. You kind of really like, it's like,
it's kind of like the beginning of Echoes, those first couple notes.
Yeah, it's like. So it's got this whole separation. And then it's really versatile, this thing I built, you know. Then I got this MIDI switch here, so you can kind of like, you get both, you know, you can play the mellotron, but you're getting both sounds, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then got these drives. These go into the DIs only. These are kind of like just a little bit of drive going in through each one of them. But, but this thing is incredible. I mean, it can do so much, you know, you can like. You just cut it out of the amps, you know.
It's like, instant stop.
So it's really, yeah, it's a super versatile thing. Kind of like, I built this when the baby was born.
Because you had a bunch of free time on your hands.
It's just when the baby slept, I couldn't play guitar, you know. It's too loud. But I could do this through my cans, you know. So I just built this thing so I could just have like loads of things going on at the same time. And when you mix the sort of the delays and this and with the playing of this, it's kind of like, there's quite a lot you can do. And then it just, once we started playing again and writing again, I kind of brought that to the studio. And so a lot of it sort of like shaped it, you know.
I can't wait to see the evolution of your rig the next time we touch base.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to simplify, to be honest. At some point, maybe, I don't know.
Well, Carlos, I really appreciate your time. I know we got to get out of here, but man, good
you
luck.
Too. Thank you.
Congrats again on the baby and the record.
Yeah, well, congrats on the baby too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Till next time, y'all.
See ya.